Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable, episode 130, Louisiana State University Tigers football preview, recorded Saturday, August 23rd, 2014. Returning after technical difficulty, Stephen Baker joins Shane Bailey to look at the LSU Tigers. After placing 9 more players in the NFL draft, the LSU Tigers look to not miss a step and reload with another strong group of freshmen and sophomores to hit the field. They look at the defensive side of the ball and discuss what role the linebacking core will have. They also look at what game management means at LSU and how the running back tandems of Hillard, Fournette, and Henry will be key. They also go off topic to discuss the possibility of an SEC team not making the national championship. All this and more on today's SEC SRT. Welcome to SEC Sports Roundtable. This is episode 130, our LSU football preview. This is the Charlie Sheen Hot Shots Part 2 version. If you were able to catch some of the earlier when we tried this week, I know we had some huge technical difficulties on a couple people's ends, some bad audio. So it's a condensed version. It's a shorter group of people, but, you know, the audio and video quality is going to be much improved. So in that standpoint, it's going to be a much better podcast. And it's not because we have two guests that aren't with us tonight. But joining me today, we have Stephen Baker.
Hey, nice to be here.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Hopefully I'm not screwing up the audio this time.
Audio's sounding great. You were getting
computers hate me. It's just one of those rules. I don't know what it is, but technology and me do not get along.
And some of our Twitter followers, you know, showed our disgust for your audio too. I think you know a couple of them. So that was some fun banter that we were having.
They are familiar with how much computers hate me. I am a classic Luddite. If we could do this by smoke signals, I'd be pretty happy.
Awesome. Well, you know, I've got lots of firewood here, so it'd be hard for you to see me. You're down in Texas, I think, but we could try.
That's right. But we can do brush fires around here. It's pretty easy.
Has it been pretty dry or wet?
Actually, this has been a pretty wet season, so this is the first year that we're allowed to, like, turn on our grills without having to worry about the, you know, house burning down.
We've been pretty lucky up here. But so we do have Stephen Baker back. He has a couple things that he keeps his hands involved with. And the Valley Shook is where I think he spends most of his time. He's on Twitter. You want to tell a little bit about yourself and throw a few plugs in while you've got the second and the opportunity?
Yeah, I write under the pseudonym Poser, P-O-S-E-U-R. That's because I'm a fake pundit. And I write at andthevalleyshook.com. That's part of the SB Nation network. We're the LSU blog on there. We have tons of great work there. I tend to be the jackass. But Billy is really good at breaking down film. We have Paul Crew, who is a tremendous guy following recruiting. So give us a check out. We're on the SB Nation family of sites, but it's www.andthevalleyshook.com.
Awesome. We're glad that you're able to join us. And so those that are new to the podcast, we bring this from a fan's perspective. So that's why we, you know, over the last 3.5 years or so that we've been doing this, we try to bring in some different viewpoints. And so I'm going to play devil's advocate at times, and I'm going to agree at times, but I'm not your fan of LSU. That's not the team I root for. So you're going to get some true SEC dialogue going on between different conferences, fans. And so that's the whole object of this. Normally we have 3 or 4 guys on here. We did do that last time but scheduling, we wanted to make sure we got this podcast out for you guys. So now it's just me and Steven going back and forth. But we do this every week as the season progresses. Right now we're in the middle of our SEC preview. So we're doing every team, all 14 teams in the SEC leading up to this Thursday's upcoming kickoff. So going to get you prepared for the games the way we see them. We've had some disagreements already. Some Texas A&M fans definitely didn't agree with what we had to say. That's okay. We appreciate that. Like I told them, and this is my platform, I'll get to say it now in front of everybody. We've been pretty good about what we've chosen and how we've done this over the last 3.5 years. So we're sorry you don't like what we have to say. More times than not, we are right, or at least on the right side of things. Last year, for example, in our Auburn preview, we said the team you don't want to face at the end of the year is Auburn Tigers. Now, we might have not said that they're going to win the national championship, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody that would have done that. So, you know, we're on it. We get what's going on in the SEC. We're not just fanboys of one particular team. We've got a good grasp of the way this all works. So today we've got Steven. We're going to sit down and talk about LSU. You know, looking at it, it's just amazing from the outside looking in how well LSU just rebuilds year after year after year after year. I mean, I don't know the stats, but it seems like they've put 50 or so people in the NFL the last few years. It seems like
no school has lost more underclassmen to the NFL than LSU, and it's just routine. Every year you expect 10 guys to go to the NFL draft, and really the way that Les Miles handles this is that a lot of schools give lip service to saying, oh, we'll play you as a freshman. At LSU, they really do. You show up on campus, and you're expected to contribute right away because Les Miles kind of has the attitude that if you're a truly elite recruit, he has you for 3 years, and he's not going to waste those. Not only do we lose guys as juniors, we lose guys as sophomores. Trey Turner, an offensive lineman, went to the NFL draft as a sophomore. Jeremy Hill went as a sophomore. And he was actually, I think, encouraged by the team because he initially announced, I'm coming back, and then a day later he went to the NFL draft. To me, that seems like Les Miles and the staff sat down with him and said, dude, you're going to be a first or second round pick. Get the money.
And it didn't have anything to do with, you know, Leonard coming in and taking carries either.
It had a lot to do with Leonard. But it also shows that this is a program that doesn't try and put the program before the players. This is a very player-friendly program. They say, when Les Miles says, I'm going to put you in the NFL, he's going to put you in the NFL. And if you're ready to go, we're going to say Godspeed. And everyone's going to say, you know, have fun in the NFL. There's no hard feelings for guys who leave as a junior in most cases. If you're going in like the fifth or sixth round and you're a junior, you probably should have come back. Not because we don't like you. That's more that you've cost yourself money. You should have come back as a senior because I wrote about this in the offseason. Really, it's about the third round is about when you'll have an NFL career. Forget about the big money. If you get taken in the fourth or later, you might not have an NFL career. You might not even make the team. You won't even make it through your rookie contract. And everyone always talks about the big money is that second contract. But if you're a fourth-round draft pick, you might not ever see that second contract. You need to go third or higher. And if you're third or higher, LSU tells you to go.
And I'm going to stop you real quick and say, unless injury comes into play, I mean, Zach Mettenberger is a great example of that. Here in Nashville, we've got him as a Tennessee Titan as a sixth-round pick. That was a steal. I mean, you're not going to get a better value of an NFL caliber type of quarterback. And he's already impressing those that are around the Nashville area, the Tennessee Titan fans, about what he's been able to do as a rookie on the field. Now, he still makes rookie mistakes. He's still got to learn the program. But he came in as the third string, sixth round pick. And he's, you know, with Charlie Whitehurst being injured, he's quickly being able to move up and possibly be the second quarterback on the depth chart when the season starts. And fully healthy, I mean, was he 8 months removed from the knee surgery?
Yeah, he got hurt in the Alabama game, and I think he had surgery right in the offseason, and he's ready to go. Honestly, I'd be shocked if Zach Mettenberger is not the starter in Tennessee at the end of the season. And I also think Zach Mettenberger and Aaron Murray are going to be the two SEC quarterbacks taken this year who will have the best NFL careers. I love Aaron Murray. I can't believe he slid in the draft. I understand Zach Mettenberger a little bit more, but I'm not even saying this is a guy who's – I'm not a fan of Georgia. The fact that Aaron Murray slid as far as he did was just insane.
Yeah, no.
Those two guys are NFL quarterbacks. They have NFL arms. They just scream NFL. And the fact that they slid, that means there was some teams got some serious values off those two.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm also going to put Connor Shaw as a B-level. And he might not make the NFL because they're not giving him the chance. But
and that's what it really is. If you get taken late, you might not get a chance. It has nothing to do with talent. If you get taken in the fourth or fifth round, it's not that you don't have the talent to play. It's all about opportunity. And if you don't get opportunity, you're out of the league because they just cycle through people so fast.
Yeah, no, you're right. It does at that point become a matter of opportunities that they have to be able to see. And that's why Zach has been able to maybe supplant himself as a second round and really put his name and stamp on on there she is, put the stamp on the Tennessee Titans right now for the simple fact that Charlie Whitehurst got injured. He hurt his hand. So now Zach Mettenberg's getting all these extra reps. He's getting that second QB reps. He's getting that extra play and visual eye test stuff that people see in the preseason. So that's how he's able to help raise his stock, even though he was a sixth-round pick. And it's going to take those injury opportunities for something like that to really happen for those fourth-round and above. But
and
this
– the turnip at LSU, that's what happens at LSU. Guys leave so early. We need freshmen to compete right away. And that's like a guy coming in that's not getting as much hype as Fournette. Jamal Adams is going to come in there, and they're already talking about – they've already mentioning the honey badger and in all seriousness comparing his ball skills to him. This guy's going to see the field right away. He's not going to start his first game, but I'd be stunned if he's not starting at the end of the year. And that's what LSU does. They take freshmen, they put them in there, and by the time they're sophomores, they're veterans. Tre'Davious White is a true sophomore, and he's considered one of the veteran leaders of this team. And that's how LSU works. Guys leave, and immediately freshmen are expected to contribute. And I don't think there's another good program like LSU that puts so much emphasis on freshmen playing right away.
You bring up Adams. He's going to be he was recruited at safety, correct?
Yeah, he'll be a safety.
Yeah, it's just amazing when you look at what they have. I mean, even from the quarterback standpoint, I think Harris is really putting pressure on the quarterback side. I mean, we just had a quarterback announcement not too long ago, right?
There's no announcement. They've said they're going to play both of them. There's no telling which one of the two is going to be the starter. We'll have a two quarterback system for a while, and I know that's what they say, that if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. I would say, as well as LSU has managed freshman playing, the one position that LSU, and this isn't just Les Miles, this is LSU historically, LSU has really mismanaged the quarterback position over the entire course of this program. I think like one of our second or third top, outside of like Tommy Hodson, Jamarcus Russell, there's really not a whole lot of big-time quarterbacks. Burt Jones back in the 70s. But like I think Jeff Wickersham is one of LSU's top yardage quarterbacks. And that's, for a top-tier program, that's pretty frightening. LSU won a national championship with Matt Mock as a quarterback and then Matt Flynn. I mean, this is a team that couldn't win the SEC title with Zach Mettenberger and then went to the BCS championship game with Jordan Jefferson. And that says a lot about how little LSU values the quarterback position.
Well, we've talked about that on our previous – I don't know if we did it last year when you were on for the LSU preview podcast. But that's the one thing we kept talking about, as well as LSU. If LSU can have a quarterback that becomes effective, they have a shot. And sometimes they utilize the moniker never gets put on an LSU quarterback, but they need a game manager. And that's all they need at LSU, is someone to manage that offense and be the director. And all of a sudden their defense is going to step up, and we'll talk about their defense. I'll let you talk about that. That's going to be an incredible wall that's going to be put in place this year on the defensive side LSU has. So you're not going to get a lot of points against them. You're going to have a strong running game that they're going to be able to pound and control the line of scrimmage with. You just need a quarterback that's effective.
I would say the LSU quarterback's two most important jobs. One is handing the ball off to whatever great running back LSU has that year. And second, not throwing interceptions.
Great, plural, quarterback,
yeah.
Or running backs.
Yeah, and that's another big thing about LSU is LSU does not tend to use just one running back. I think Fournette, like everybody else, I think Fournette's going to be a star. He's going to play a ton. But he's not going to get that kind of wear down that you see at like Alabama running backs get, where Nick Saban, he finds his horse and he just rides that guy. Les Miles has the opposite philosophy. He likes to spread the ball around. He likes to have three or four backs. He likes to keep guys fresh, and it really pays off if you look at a guy like Jeremy Hill last season. He would rush in the first quarter, get going, and then he would kind of take the second and third quarter off. He'd get a few carries to stay fresh, but then the fourth quarter, he would come in with fresh legs and just hammer teams.
Yeah, and then you know, during that period of time when he's taking off, you put Alfred Blue in.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This year, it'll be Terrence McGee. It's going to be Hilliard getting all the short yardage situations. Williams, another freshman, is going to probably see some carries. They just keep coming at you in waves. The running backs at LSU, it's amazing the amount of talent that has come through LSU in their running back position. And it's just going to keep going. But he'll never get enough carries to compete for a Heisman, which is kind of a shame. I don't think Fournette's ever – he'll be lucky if he ever gets invited to New York City, just because I don't think he'll ever get the carries.
But he's going to play in the NFL. One thing that these guys have that it's funny you say that. It just hit me in the head as you're talking about this stuff. The fresh legs. You know, today's NFL running back only has so many carries in their body. And you look at the Alabama running backs, the Mark Ingrams and such. They're effective, but they've not been earth-shattering in the NFL. It's because, like you said, Saban gives them that rock, and that's their guy. You know.
Yeah, in a way, he uses them up, but I don't really want to criticize Saban for that. He does put him in the NFL, so I don't want this to look as a shot at Nick Saban or Alabama. But he uses those carries up. You only have so much tread on those tires. And Alabama basically uses as much of that tread as they can, which, hey, I have T.J. Yeldon, and I do the same thing. That guy's an amazing running back.
Yes.
It's just that LSU has a slightly different philosophy. And honestly, I think this year, Saban's going more and more to two or three running backs because you'll see Henry out there getting a ton of carries
And over the last couple seasons, you've seen him progress that more. And that philosophy is able to be effective. He's able to give them fresher legs and do that. But it's funny when you say, I mean, Mark Ingram's one that pops in my mind. I mean, he was such a great running back, and now that he's in the NFL, you've not seen him break out like everybody thought. I mean, you know, doing fantasy football, you know, the first couple of years, he was always on my watch list. You know, that's somebody I think I need to put on my team because he's such a stud back there in the backfield, and it's not worked out so much in the NFL, and it could be the fact that he took so many carries. I don't know. Could be the scheme, could be the I'm not an NFL guy. There could be a hundred other reasons besides the one I just thought of.
There almost always is. The NFL, a lot of it's just it comes, once again, to an opportunity. And sometimes a guy, if you don't impress right away, there's another guy willing to take your job. And that's different than college, because college, you can't really replace guys. There's no free agency. There's no waiver wire. And in the NFL, you have two or three bad games, that general manager's already written you off. In college, if you have a bad freshman year, they're saying, oh, this guy has to hit the weight room, and we're going to make him a better as a sophomore. They have more invested in you, and so they care more about you becoming a good player in the future. The NFL doesn't care about your future.
Well, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the defensive side of the ball. What are you most excited about on that side?
I said it last year, and I was really wrong after you hyped up our predictions. I was really excited last year about the linebacking core. I thought it was going to be one of terrific linebacking core for LSU. And honestly, it was a big disappointment. It wasn't like the defense was terrible last year, but they weren't great. And that was a huge disappointment. But pretty much all those linebackers come back. A lot of them are sophomores and juniors. And I think this is the year they break out. I think we were just a year early on it. It reminds me a lot of about 5 or 6 years ago when Florida's defensive backfield was pretty terrible, and because they had so many young players, and the next year they were awesome, and they rode it to a national title. That's what I'm seeing out of LSU's linebackers. There's just too much talent, and they're so fast, and particularly for the size they have. Quan Alexander, I think, is just about to be one of the SEC's best players. Kendall Beckwith, he's not a starter yet. DJ Welter's kind of the old man senior who's the leader of the defense. But I think Beckwith's going to push him so hard for a playing time. They're almost going to be splitting time. And then it's just the depth. They just come at you in ways. Lamar Lewis, Debo Jones, Clifton Garrett's a freshman who's impressing. This linebacking core just has so much talent. I can't imagine them being as poor as they were last year. And they're going to be the unit that they rely on. These are now the veterans of the team. Last year, they were the hotshot freshmen and sophomores. This year, this is the veteran talent. This is the core of the team. And it's a John Chavis defense. Chavis, he's made his bones on linebacker play. And I think it's time we see that pay off. I think I was just a year early on it. I'm doubling down on a bet that was wrong last year. I think LSU's linebackers are going to be great.
Well, and you couple that with, you know, Rasko and Hunter on the defensive line, you know, they're still going to get you a fair amount of sacks, which is going to add added pressure to that offensive line to open up space for those linebackers to come in on those blitz packages.
Daniil Hunter, he's a man among boys. That guy's incredible. Rasko has never quite panned out. He was a 5-star recruit, and he's never quite played up to that. He's fought through injuries. I think I don't want to be insulting, but I think he's just a guy. I think he'll, you know, make some plays, but I don't think LSU is relying on him to be a star player. That's definitely Hunter's job. The defensive tackles, losing once again two guys to the NFL draft, but LSU redshirted a ton of freshmen last
now,
year.
You say that, but didn't he lead the team in sacks?
Yeah, but we didn't have a ton of sacks last year. I think it was like four sacks last year.
Yeah, that's what he had.
This team just didn't – last year, LSU was very weird for an LSU defense. They didn't have very many sacks, and they didn't have very many interceptions. I think both of those numbers are going to change. And honestly, last year, the defensive tackles both went to the NFL. But LSU tends to rely on rotation. They're used to having a very deep rotation of running backs – excuse me, defensive tackles. Last year, they just rode two guys as much as they could, and they redshirted a lot of the talent. And this year, those red shirts, they're going to play. They're going to be and I think the defensive tackles are going to go five or six deep. We don't know which one of them are going to be good, but certainly one of them is. But I think what's really going to be, it's like the running backs. It's just that rotation of guys. They just keep running fresh legs at you, which LSU couldn't do last year. And that kind of hurt the defense, even though I think they had more talented individual players. Ego and Freak Johnson, just great players. They don't have anyone that good, but they have a lot more depth.
On both sides of the ball, what are you most excited about?
I'm most excited about seeing Leonard Fournette play.
You and the rest of the nation, right?
Yeah, I'm not a big recruiting guy. I tend to view it as a numbers game. It doesn't really matter what guy you get. If you fall in love with a guy, you're going to be unhappy. But I've been hearing about Leonard Fournette for about 5 years. I mean, this guy is just the most hyped prospect I can ever remember, and they've done nothing to tamp down our expectations. Les Miles is comparing him to Michael Jordan. Adrian Peterson, that's another name that they're dropping. I am so excited just to see if he's the real deal. It'd be impossible not to be excited by this guy. On defense, I'm excited to see LSU return to the defense that we're used to. Last year's defense was good, but it wasn't great. And at LSU, we expect great. And I'm happy that this is going to be a team that's going to rely on running the ball and playing just killer defense. And last year, we tried to win shootouts. And that was fun. I liked it. But that's not what I think of when I think of LSU football. It was a lot more fun going back to our roots and having just these bunch of slobber knockers who are going to hit the heck out of you. And I like a team that relies on defense and running game, not because I think it's better football, but because that's what I'm used to. That's what I think of when I say LSU football, and I'm really excited that we're going back to that.
Well, when you're talking about that hard-hitting football, that's a great transition to look at our schedule, because week one, both teams give you that.
Oh, yeah, Wisconsin and LSU are very similar football teams, and I know I said this in the last time if anyone could hear the audio, but if anyone who's overlooking Wisconsin is an idiot. That is a great football team. They run the ball. They've got a ton of offensive line talent. They are the LSU of the Big Ten. They line up, they tell you exactly what they're going to do, and just dare you to stop them. They are one heck of a program. And I'm looking forward to a game. I think it's going to be a statement game where LSU says, we can beat you playing this style of football. We can line up with you, and we're going to crush you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if you look at Wisconsin, the way they've lined up, go on, Steven, I can talk for a minute. When you look at Wisconsin and what this provides for them is if all of a sudden you have a victory against LSU, that opens them up to a Big Ten championship. And so all of a sudden, if you look at the way Wisconsin can, if they beat LSU, all of a sudden you've got an opportunity for them to run the table in the Big Ten. So this is a huge, huge game for Wisconsin. Now, I will say that looking at this and the depth and the quality, that I'm going to give LSU the advantage, and I believe you did too on the last podcast, is that we both think that it's going to be a hard-fought game. It's down in Houston, which is going to be almost a home game for LSU, which also bodes well for them. I think this is a win. I think it's a 7 to 10 point win for them.
I think you're right. I think once again it goes down to the whole philosophy of LSU, that they wear you down in the fourth quarter. And I think LSU's depth at running back, and also the fact that LSU returns four starting offensive linemen and another two guys who have a lot of experience, I think eventually LSU's experience of running the football, the talent they have in the backfield, will be the difference. But it's not going to be a cakewalk. And, yeah, I think the home crowd helps. Houston, that's an LSU town. And I think LSU is going to win, but it's not going to be an easy one, and it's going to be a fun game. Like, there's going to be some snot bubbles.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that one, and that's a week away. After that, I think they get a little bit of a breather with Sam Houston State. They get to pay Houston back by having one of their teams come back to LSU. I think that's an easy victory for LSU, and so is UL Monroe.
Yeah, I think those are the two games where Les Miles tries to work on who's the starting quarterback. The big worry in the Wisconsin game, I know we're going to have two quarterbacks, is who's going to be the starter, who's going to emerge. I think those next two games are a chance for LSU to figure out who's the man. Jennings and Harris, it's going to be an open competition for almost the entire season, but you'd like someone to step up and say, I'm the starting quarterback, this is my job. And those two games, that's a chance for someone to do that. I mean, I know it's not a big pressure situation, but you can put up some numbers there and just show what kind of talent you have.
But it's there for the taking, and that's the thing, is can one of those two quarterbacks step up and say, I'm the man, I want this all put on my shoulder, and I'm going to lead the team. If that happens in one of those two games, now you've supplanted a quarterback for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think that's correct. I think one of the big things is, and this goes for every position at LSU, Miles will play talent, but he defers to the veteran guy, says, okay, it's his job, but then says to the younger guy, you can take his job, force him to play better, you can steal this job from him. I think that's what's also going to happen at the linebacker position with Beckwith and Welter. The reason Beckwith isn't playing, despite being more talented than Welter, is that he hasn't taken the job from him. And Miles demands that players take the job. And that's what you're hoping one of the quarterbacks does, that they say, this is my job. I'm the starting quarterback. I'm the leader of this team. And until one of those guys does this, we're going to be in a two-quarterback system.
The next matchup, though, that's, to me, somewhat of a trap game. But as much as I would like to say Mississippi State can win, they can win. But Mississippi State has always had a trouble with LSU. LSU and Arkansas gives them fits every year. Mississippi State with Dak Prescott, their defensive line, their defense all around is much improved. They're able to compete. I don't know if in the Mississippi State preview, I couldn't give them the win, and I can't do it today still, even after talking to you about LSU.
Mississippi State, I agree that this is one of the best Mississippi State teams in a while, but Mississippi State, I think it's 20 years they've only beaten LSU one time, and that dates back to the Curly Hallman era, and Curly was not a good coach, and those were not good LSU teams, and those were good Mississippi State teams. It's just one of those things. LSU owns Mississippi State, and until State can show otherwise, LSU gets to count this as a victory. That doesn't mean that there haven't been close calls, but there haven't been a whole lot of them. And even if you look back 20 years ago, even when State was the better team, LSU beat State.
They found a way to win.
Yeah, and now that LSU is the better team, I think it's in their heads. I really don't think that State believes they can beat LSU. They say they do, but I don't think they do.
Yeah, I'm totally like you. If this was a little bit more evened of a matchup over the history, I might actually pick Mississippi State in this game because they're that improved this year. But for some reason, LSU and Arkansas gives them fits year after year. And until they can, like you said, they've got to show me that they can beat you before I can. And that's like Kentucky with Tennessee. You know, Kentucky had to actually beat Tennessee before I could pick them to win.
Yeah, it's a good veteran team. I mean, I like Dak Prescott. I like their defense. I like everything about State. It's not going to be an easy win for LSU, but I just can't pick State to beat LSU. The only time it's happened in my memory, it was off of a disputed call. And I wasn't even upset because it was just like, hey, let them have one. I don't think State has beaten LSU this century. It's just one of those things. LSU owns State, and it's not just the difference in quality. There's a mental aspect to that as well. Because if you remember a few years ago, there was that miracle Chad Jones punt return for LSU to beat State. It's just one of those things. Things happen. Even when State has the game in their grasp, LSU finds a way to win.
Yeah, and the next state I'm going to give you a win too, but it's not going to be near as hard to take this victory home, and that's going to be New Mexico State. So basically you start off with five home games in a row.
Pretty much, yeah. And that helps a lot. You get you out of the gate 5-0. LSU should be in the top 10 if they beat Wisconsin and don't get upset by State, but I think LSU's capable of that. That's That's how you want to start your season, particularly with a young team. Even by LSU standards, this is a young team, and you want to get out of the gate strong. And that feeds that belief that, you know, this is the year and there's something special happening, which there kind of is that feeling that this is going to be a special LSU team. Maybe not 2011 special, but maybe 2005 special.
I'm going to give you a loss at one of the next two games. I think I picked Florida the last time, and I'm almost picking Auburn today. It's that's the way these two games look for me. They're both away. Both teams are going to be good. Florida, by all indications, is the dark horse to win the SEC East. I don't think they have the horses to run with Georgia this year, but you know they're healthy, and that really decimated that program last year, was injury after injury and against key players. I mean, it wasn't just, you know, some outside linebacker that never saw playing time. It was starters. It was the stars of that program injured. It's a much improved Florida program. Auburn was a couple plays away from a national championship last year. Both of those are hard places to play. Today I'm picking the loss at Auburn and the win at Florida.
I do agree that LSU is going to split those games. They're going to go 1-1 in those games. I just don't know which when. I think LSU is going to beat Auburn. I kind of have a hunch about that. I know LSU has a very bad track record in the Plains. Plains is a tough place to play. So is the Swamp, for that matter. And one of the things that makes those places so tough to play is the teams that play there, not just the stadium and the crowd. But LSU just matches up so well against spread offenses. LSU is the only team that didn't lose to Johnny Manziel. Beat them twice. Auburn, LSU beat Gus Malzahn last year. They just have this way of figuring out spread offenses. I think they can beat Auburn again, but I don't think they beat both Auburn and Florida. That's just too much to do. Florida's a really good team. I agree. They lost a lot last year. The injuries just piled up. And LSU, even as Florida was down, LSU didn't really dominate. Has not really dominated Florida either. They've had problems with Florida a lot. But
like you said, it's the team. Florida generally is a really good program, and so you know it's tough to play a tough team. And I'm like you, so I think on the original podcast I had them losing to Florida and winning at Auburn, but you know it's going to be that close. And I'm like you, they're splitting one of those two games. One of those two games is going to be a loss for them. I just have the feeling.
LSU is too young to go in two tough road games and win them both. If they do win both those games, we're talking national title. If they're probably going to have a problem with one of those games, just to be fair.
Yeah.
And give me a quick second.
No, go right ahead. We've got Kentucky to talk about, so there's not much.
Yeah, stall on Kentucky.
So the next game, my University of Kentucky Wildcats get to travel to Baton Rouge. So, of course, you know, that's going to be such a hyped-up game. Kentucky's going to be on such a winning streak. This is going to be a night game at LSU. It's going to be on national TV. It's going to be the CBS game. I wish I could get to that and make that. Did I sound believable at all to you listeners? I wish that was the case for Kentucky. Unfortunately, with Stoops, that program is on the rise. It is a much improved program that's going to be on the field this year over last year. There were huge strides last year from the beginning to the end of the season. You saw their point differentials shrink as the season went on. So they are a much better program. They didn't have a win in the SEC last year, and it's going to be hard-pressed to get one again this year for the Kentucky Wildcats, especially traveling down to Baton Rouge to play LSU. So there's no way I can give Kentucky this win. So I know that Stephen, who had to go take care of something, is going to agree with me on the Kentucky side of this, that this is another LSU win. So they're looking at 5-6-7-1 hosting Ole Miss. And they've got the schedule when I'm looking at this for home games. So Ole Miss gets to come to the Swamp the week after Kentucky comes in, and that's an interesting game. Mississippi is Ole Miss is going to be another well improved program, an opportunity to compete for the West. I think it's a 4-team race between Alabama, LSU, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. I put Alabama and LSU as 1 and 1A. No particular order you could pick. You could flip-flop them. You could put LSU 1 and Alabama 1A. I don't care. Those are the 1, 1As. And then Ole Miss, Mississippi State is 2B, 2 and 2B. And you can interchange those. The problem for me for Ole Miss, I gave Kentucky the loss for you, Stephen. I hope you don't care.
I think we're going to beat Kentucky pretty easily.
The thing for Ole Miss to me is they're going to have a tremendous defense. They're going to have an improved offense. They're going to have a healthy Bo Wallace. But I don't think a healthy Bo Wallace is going to be enough to beat LSU. That, to me, I'm not sold on Bo Wallace as the heir apparent savior for Ole Miss's program to make them a contender for the West. They're going to be a great program. You know, hopefully, maybe they can prove me wrong, but I'm just not seeing it. So I'm giving LSU that win. Even as good as Ole Miss is going to be, Bo Wallace is still their Achilles heel.
I think depth is also a problem for Ole Miss.
Good point. Great point.
They have great starters. Their starters match up with anybody in the SEC. But if someone goes down, or even if no one gets hurt, just general fatigue in a football game, when LSU brings out the second string, it's better than Ole Miss's second string, and the gap is pretty wide.
Yeah, when we did our Ole Miss podcast preview, Cole is our Ole Miss guy, and he brought up a great point. You know, I was talking about how great the recruiting was, but they needed that just to get players on the field, he was saying. It's not a matter of they've been able to do this, and like LSU, have had a number of years of this great recruiting, so they have this depth that they could pull from and put this 2 and 3 and 4 man deep in these positions. They're one man, sometimes two positions deep is it, and they get thin real early.
Yeah, the cupboard was bare at Ole Miss, and they've done a fantastic job in the last two seasons, but there's still plenty of work to do. Dr. Bo is pretty much the best quarterback you can have for a bad team or an up-and-coming team, because he's the kind of quarterback who's going to win you football games, because he can put you on his back, and he can make plays, and he can win games almost on his own. The thing is,
he has. He did last year.
He's also reckless.
Yes.
He's going to turn the ball over. He's going to make terrible decisions. And he's going to cost you football games like he did in the Egg Bowl. And that's kind of what Dr. Bo is. You know, Dr. Bo gives, he takes away. And if you're an up-and-coming program like Ole Miss, that's the exact quarterback you want, because he could put you on the map. He could pull those big upsets. If you're a program like LSU or Alabama, you don't want any part of a quarterback like that, because what he does is he costs – the rest of your playmakers the game. And Ole Miss just doesn't have enough playmakers. I think if you look at LSU and Ole Miss last year, Ole Miss had a perfect storm. Zach Mettenberger, I think, threw 3 interceptions. Bo Wallace completed 75% of his passes. Ole Miss played their perfect game. And hats off to them. They won that game fair and square. But they won on a last-second field goal. If you have a perfect storm and still need a last-second field goal to win, in the next season, you're probably not going to get that perfect storm again. They might. Ole Miss always plays LSU tough, but at the end of the day, I just don't think as many things that went right for them against LSU will 2 years in a row.
No, you're right. And another thing that's going against Ole Miss is you look at the schedule. I was being silly buying some time for dead air while you had to step away. I was saying that Kentucky's going to be a much improved program. They're going to have lots of wins coming in. It's going to be a night game. That can be the case for this game with Ole Miss. You know, all those things I said just a few minutes ago about Kentucky being silly could hold true for Ole Miss. And now all of a sudden you're looking at a night game in the Swamp, and that's even harder to do. Death Valley, excuse me.
I mean, I think for Ole Miss, this is a really weird season for them. They could win 8 or 9 games, compete for the SEC West title. I mean, that's on the table for them. I mean, they need other teams to lose, but they could be in the mix. Or with their schedule, things can go badly and keep getting worse, and they could miss a bowl game entirely. They're one of the hardest teams in the SEC to get a read on. In fact, that speaks to the SEC this year. This is a hard conference to predict this year. A lot of teams are pretty even. There's no real front runner. I know a lot of people think Alabama is. I'm just not as sold on Alabama this year. They lost more starters than LSU did, and LSU lost a lot of starters. So I don't think there's this big front runner, and it's a big jumble of teams. So Ole Miss is kind of the bell cow of the SEC this year. Like they're a metaphor for the whole conference. Anything can happen. They can have a great year or they can have an awful year.
Now, let me ask you, we had a pretty good discussion at the end of the podcast that we tried to record the other night. Let's try to recreate some of that. What do you think is the possibility that a two-loss SEC program can actually go play for the national championship? Because you look at the way, what you just talked about, the way the SEC is today, you're not looking at an undefeated team going to play in Atlanta. And there's a good chance that that team that comes to Atlanta is going to have a second loss on their resume.
It's very possible. No one saw Auburn come in last year, and someone this year might roll through the conference with only one loss.
Sure.
There's a lot of teams that are talented enough to do it. But let's just grant the premise that someone gets through with two losses, and that's very possible. I think 6-2 might win the West this year. 6-2 might win the East. At the end of the day, the college football playoff needs legitimacy, and they do not want to leave an SEC team out in their first year. If they leave out a two-loss SEC champion, the college football playoff is going to have a bit of a black eye. It's going to be hard for them to sell it. They're going to need an SEC team at least this year. But I think if this was the third year of the college football playoff, a two-loss SEC team would be sweating bullets. I think the only way a two-loss SEC team misses out is if you have like an undefeated Florida State, someone just rolls through the Big 12, like Baylor goes 11-1 or 12-0, Wisconsin or Michigan State goes 12-0 in the Big 10, and then you have to choose between a Pac-12 and an SEC one or two-loss team. And those are the two strongest conferences. So those are the conferences most likely to churn out a two-loss champ just because there's so many good contenders. We talk about it in the SEC, but it's going to hurt the Pac-12 as well. You have Oregon, Stanford, USC.
UCLA.
Oh, UCLA. I love UCLA this year. And the champ in there is not going to have an easy ride. And even the second tier, just like in the SEC, the Pac-12 has a ton of great second tier teams. Arizona State looks really good. Washington's pretty darn good. They have the same problem the SEC does. It's almost these really strong conferences beat each other up. And it's going to be almost impossible to go undefeated. And it's going to be likely that we'll see a two-loss champ from one of those two conferences. And they might not make the playoffs. And I think the college football playoff really wants a two-loss SEC champ or just any SEC champ because they don't want to have a giant foobar in their first year.
Well, you mentioned the Big Ten. And with Braxton Miller going down, that almost guarantees a loss for Ohio State now.
I think Michigan State's just going to roll through that conference. Michigan State just looks so much better than everyone else.
I was going to say Wisconsin is going to have a loss the first game of the season.
We hope so.
That left, you stole my thunder, that leaves Michigan State. And on their schedule, they have Penn State, they have Michigan, and they have Ohio State. There's a good chance that they could lose to one of those programs.
It's possible, but I don't think Penn State's that strong. And Michigan's real hit or miss. It's a rivalry game, so anything can happen. And Ohio State without Braxton Miller, that scares me.
They're not going to be undefeated, but they're still going to be good.
Yeah, I think that. I think they'll win.
It's not going to be Northwestern. You know, it's not going to be. But it's so there's some obstacles that Michigan State has to overcome to become undefeated. You know,
the problem is if you're the college football playoff committee, if you're sitting on that committee and you're looking at a two-loss SEC champ, and let's just say it's Alabama, and Alabama has lost to either LSU or Auburn, and then they lost to Georgia. And those games were both, you know, last-second wins or whatever, and LSU and Georgia both only have two losses. And they beat, let's say, Florida in the SEC championship game, and Florida only had one loss. And they beat either the other one of Auburn, LSU, and that team only has two or three losses, and they only beat a three-loss Ole Miss team and a four-loss Mississippi State team. That resume is incredible. I mean, even with two losses, they're going to have more quality wins and more acceptable losses than anyone else in the country. And it's going to be really hard sitting there in that committee room and say, I'm going to pass them over for a Florida State team that went 11-1 and didn't play anybody.
Yeah. I agree. The argument is going to happen when all of a sudden if Florida State stumbles. Now you've got a one-loss Florida State. So now you've got a whole pack of one-loss teams and a two-loss. It's going to be fun. That's why we do these every week. because we get to talk about the unknowns. But that's the interesting thing, is that there is that opportunity that you might have a 2-loss SEC team on the outside looking in when it's all said and done.
It's very possible, but
unlikely.
First year, I think the first year thing is really what's going to push the SEC through. But I do think eventually we'll see an 8-team playoff, and the 5 conference champs will be guaranteed a slot. You'll have 3 at-larges.
And I think that's, and I've said this before, that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
I agree.
Because it just makes sense. And let's face it, the NCAA and the college football presidents, they're greedy. This is going to it's going to be another huge money grab for them. This is going to be the proof of concept. They're going to be able to come back in 3 years and say, hey, let's double this to 8 teams. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to be. And also, I think it's going to happen when an SEC team gets left out, because the SEC, we tend to be the most vocal. And when an SEC team gets left out of the college football playoff, that's when you'll see expansion. But I don't think they can afford it the first year.
And, oh, by the way, this is the college presidents. Let's rework that TV deal, too, while we're at it.
Hey, just add a zero to the end of that check.
Yeah. So We took a little sidebar there in the middle of our schedule, but I thought it was a good discussion, because the next team that we're talking about is Alabama coming to LSU. And my schedule, I have them with 2 losses. And this is where I don't know why. I think they could just like with the Florida-Auburn thing, they could easily win this game. But there's a chance that Alabama is going to come in and surprise you guys. You're not going to be prepared. You're going to come off of a hard-fought win at Ole Miss, against Ole Miss, excuse me, facing Alabama, and all of a sudden you're going to stumble and lose.
Well, if anyone's going to overlook anyone in this game, it's going to be Alabama overlooking LSU, and neither team's going to overlook the other one, because these are 2 big-time programs. But I think the last couple of years, Alabama has circled LSU on their schedule when it comes out. And I think this year they're circling Auburn. They're looking at the Iron Bowl.
They're double circling that one.
Exactly. And, you know, putting a highlighter on it and all that. And I don't think there's going to be quite the focus on beating LSU as there's been in Tuscaloosa the past 5 years. Their focus is on getting a win back in the Iron Bowl. It doesn't mean they're going to overlook LSU, because I don't think that's going to happen from either side. But I do think it's not quite the whole season like it's been.
Yeah, and both get a bye week before this game, too.
Yeah, both teams get a bye week. And I think that's going to be something that helps LSU. I do think LSU, Alabama, Auburn, however the season goes, I think those 3 teams are all going to go 1-1 against each other. I think they're the 3 best teams in the West, and I think they're going to split against each other. And we're going to have some weird tiebreaker, which, knowing the SEC, will go in Alabama's favor. Probably alphabetical will be the tiebreaker. These teams are so even. None of them look great. They all look really, really good. I think we're going to see just them beat each other up and kind of have that circle where one team beats one and loses to another. And I just don't see anyone separating themselves from the field. So since I'm picking LSU to beat Auburn, I'll have us losing to Alabama. But it could go the opposite way. I'd have no problem with that. Well, I'd have a problem with it. I want LSU to go undefeated. But I think that's kind of how I'm looking at the season.
But yeah, this is a coin flip game this early in the season to have to pick.
Yeah, it's hard to judge. And also, you don't know what injuries are going to look like this far in the future. But I think LSU is going to be a better team in November than they are in September. And I think at this point, LSU will have decided on who their quarterback is.
Let's hope so.
The Fournette machine will be going at this point. I think, you know, you're going to see more of those freshmen be more comfortable in their roles. It's sort of going to be how, like, Tre'Davious White got better as the year went on, or Rashard Robinson was better as the year went on. It's going to be the same thing. I think at this point, Jamal Adams is going to be a name everybody knows. I think Kendall Beckwith will probably be a starter at this point in the season. And it's going to be a different LSU team in November than catching them in September. Sort of like Auburn last year. You'd rather play LSU early.
Yeah. No, I agree with you there. Next week, you get to go up to Arkansas. I think Brett Bielema is going to have a much improved program. That's a theme. Things are improving in the SEC, but I don't think they're near where they need to be. They're another 2 years away before they could really, really get the system that he wants and the players he wants to be a contender and actually compete against some of the elite teams in the SEC. I'm giving you guys an easy win there.
Yeah, it'd be hard for Arkansas to be much worse, but you know, they've got 2 1,000-yard rushers returning, and that always helps. I mean, this is a team that looks a lot like LSU. They're going to pound the football. They should be a better football team than they were last year. But I just don't see where the wins are coming from.
Well, we said that on the last – we said that the first time we recorded this, that they could be a better team and not have a better record.
Yeah, and that's a shame. I mean, I have really nothing against Arkansas. The SEC tried to force an LSU-Arkansas rivalry on us, and I don't have any hatred of Arkansas. I kind of like how they're the plucky underdog, but I just don't see where the wins are coming. The Mississippi schools look so good this year. Texas A&M's going to take a step back, but still a good program. Arkansas is in a tough position. I don't think they're good enough to upset any of the top three. So right there, I've already had it down. I don't know who their East games are, but this could be a team that only has one or two conference wins.
No, I forgot how many we had there, but you're right. They're going to be a definite outside looking in. They're going to be hard-pressed to get a win on the East. I'm trying to pull up their schedule right now.
It's a tough road. So even if they have a better team, they could be losing a lot of football games. They're going to be competitive. They're not going to be an easy out. But I don't see how they win a lot of games. And that's a shame.
All right, I've got it pulling up right now. I should know this. We've already done the Arkansas preview. But, of course, I've slept since then.
Yeah. Big lazy bum.
I know. So, Georgia.
That's going to be a loss.
And Missouri.
Yeah, that's their cross rivalry. So
at Columbia. At Columbia.
They could be looking at 0-8 and be a good team.
Yeah. I think they've got – even one of their – they've got Texas Tech.
I think they'll beat Texas Tech. I'm not a big believer in Texas Tech. I think they're a fraud.
But when you look at a team that you schedule that's out of conference, that's not somebody you would – when you're a team rebuilding like Arkansas, that's not really the team you want to be playing.
Aren't they playing in Dallas? Is that a neutral site game? I think that's
– Yeah, it's at Jerry's.
Yeah, and yeah, that's a tough game to have. They do not have an easy schedule. I really feel bad for Arkansas this year because it's hard to maintain progress when you don't see it on the scoreboard. So even if the team gets better, could be a demoralizing year. And you don't want to see a team, because I think they went 0-8 last year. You don't want to go 0-8 in the back year. It's just not good for the conference. Yeah. You don't want to have a perpetual doormat.
It's 0-8 and possibly 3-9. And so that's hard as an Arkansas fan.
About 3 years ago, they were competing for the SEC West title.
Yep. And then you guys end the season at College Station.
Yeah, we're not happy about that. The whole Thanksgiving game, I know we talked about this. It's great to have a game on Thanksgiving if it's not your team. But when it's your team, it's terrible. LSU fans like food, and I like Thanksgiving. I like to sit down at the table with the family, and I don't want to go to a football game. I don't live that far from College Station, but I'm not going to go because I have family to see. And it's kind of a bummer because it really makes it hard to go to a football game because you have to go at the expense of family. And LSU never liked the Friday game. Kind of always felt we got screwed with that with the LSU-Arkansas game. But the Thursday game, I am not looking forward to that at all. And I think what LSU has to do is say, yeah, we don't want to be here. We don't want to be playing on Thanksgiving. So we need to take this out on Texas A&M. Instead of complaining about it and saying how it's not fair, we need to say this is not fair and it's A&M's fault. So we need to beat you by 50. And I want to see that kind of attitude.
And I think there's an opportunity. I don't think 50 is a realistic number.
But you see what I'm trying to say.
No, I definitely could see at this point in the season, if LSU continues to improve, they stay healthy, they don't get hit with some crazy injuries, which that's the unknown that none of us know when we sit here and do these podcasts or preseason looks as to what the injury bug can do to a program.
That's for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. But if those things hold true for LSU, even if Texas A&M gets better, they're not going to be the team they were last year.
I do have to say I'm a big fan of Kevin Sumlin. He did a great job at Houston. He worked miracles there. He got them to the verge of a BCS bowl and then lost in the championship game. I know a lot of people are talking about how Johnny Manziel left, but how much of that is a creation of Kevin Sumlin? And how much of that was Johnny Football? I think he's got two really big recruits there. Hill, I think, will be the starter. And I think Train is still going to keep rolling. They're still going to score a lot of points. That offense is still pretty impressive. He gets the most out of talent. A&M's future is bright, but they are going to take a step back. I don't think they're going to be contending for anything this year. And I want LSU to be angry at them. I want to see blood in people's eyes. I want to see that fountain of fire because I hate the idea of playing on Thanksgiving. And someone needs to pay. And the person who needs to pay is Kevin Sumlin.
But you know, the one knock that Sumlin gets, as good as he did at Houston, he did most of that with somebody else's players.
That's true, but he's been recruiting great.
Yeah, oh, he has. I mean,
and he's brought in some classes. The knack on A&M is their defense is terrible. It has covered your eyes awful.
And I think they're going to be better. I don't think they're going to be great. I think they're going to be better.
They couldn't be worse. And, yeah, I think they'll improve. They're a lot like LSU, where they had a lot of young players playing. But here's the thing. LSU needs to go from pretty good to very good or even great. A&M needs to go from awful to slightly below average or maybe average. When you're one of the worst defenses in the country, the ceiling on improvement, I mean, even if they double their output, they're still like the 50th defense in the country. They were awful last year. I think they can improve, but I don't think they're going to be great.
Yes. No, I agree with you. I don't think they're going to be great. And with the offense that LSU can put on the board, it's no contest. So that's got them, in my book, at 10-2.
That's what I'm looking at as well. She has a right tattoo. She hates your pick.
Lots of people do. She must be an A&M fan at heart.
No, she isn't. Don't you ever say that. I have a good friend who is trying to bribe her into becoming an A&M fan, and I get packages on my front doorstep of like A&M merchandise and like a Goodnight Moon, which is set in Aggieland.
Oh, really?
She sent us a DVD to like, you know, for little Aggies, like learning like all the tradition and stuff. She is doing everything she can to convert my child into a Texas A&M fan. And A, I think it's really great because I love how fanatical the A&M fan is. But B, that will not happen. My child is not going to be an Aggie.
I love that. Now, for those that have no kids, Goodnight Moon is just that's something you have to read to your kids when you have them. And my kids, for some reason, as much as I like that, I never had that story as a kid, but as much as I want to read that to my kids, they just don't want me to read that story for some reason. I love that.
She loves Goodnight Moon, but you got to start when they're really, really young. Like when she was 6 months old, that was her goodnight story. And now we can go around the door and say, oh, goodnight blinds, you know, goodnight lights. You don't even need the book anymore because that's really all it is. It's just listing things to say goodnight to.
Yes. And it's a great read for little kids. So.
Oh, it's the best.
For those that have no kids and are confused at what we've been talking about for the last 2 minutes. Well, Stephen, I want to thank you for being on. The audio was incredibly better. The picture was much improved. So we did it. Yeah.
See? Look at that. I'm sorry that you had to put up with a little poser running around the background. There's some dog noise.
That's all right.
You know, that's what happens when you have kids and a dog. There's never a quiet moment in the house.
Well, we threatened to throw your video off and just have a still of, what was it, Les Miles, a loop of Les Miles eating grass.
Well, I totally would support that.
So we were glad you were able to do that. Guys, this is SEC Sports Roundtable. We do this every week. You can find us on YouTube, Stitcher Radio. Great response here recently from you guys listening on Stitcher. Want to shout out for you. Thank you for listening. As well as anywhere an RSS feed can be done. So that's iTunes. Any audio podcasting app is going to have a link to our podcast. So we appreciate you listening. Love for you to subscribe. Love for you to give us some positive reviews. If you don't agree with us, let us know what you think there. We're happy to accept that feedback as well. But again, Stephen Baker from andthevalleyshook.com. Go check him out. His name and handle is Poser. That's his Twitter handle as well. So go find him and follow him there as well. You can follow us at SECSRT. Those six letters will get you everything you need for us. And with that, we are going to call this podcast done.